Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
You're listening to Christmas Hamper on FUBAR Radio.
Ian Boldsman on FUBAR Radio.
We're joined now, obviously, by Daniel Sloss. Hello, Daniel.
Hiya.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
You're coming here very bright and bushy. I'm not really in the mood for it.
I'm on marijuana.
Is that what it is? Yeah. But shouldn't that bring you down?
No, I still, it depends what type. I take it
because cakes.
I used to be a miserable bastard. Whereas weed makes me... Well, I still am.
But weed makes me nicer.
Really?
Yeah. When I was in high school and stuff, I was always very sort of... I was just a fucking angry kid. And my parents had no idea why.
Wait, are you doing material at the moment?
No.
All right, okay.
No. God, that was... I thought
you were doing that thing. Because it did sound like you're going, well, the thing is...
No, and I don't.
This isn't Conan.
No, but I hate those interviews the other way around. Whenever somebody fucking sees your routine on something, and they just tried to set you up for a stand-up in a conversation. I'm like, so Daniel, I heard your father tried to have an interesting talk with you the other day, and you're just like, oh, there's fucking nothing human about this interaction.
But he never tempted to just go, what the fuck have you heard that?
Oh, totally. Like, it would be the best thing.
Have you been in touch with?
I haven't spoke to my father in years. Why? My father's
I've
dead.
I've never met you before. Why would you be hearing about my personal life?
Yeah. Who snitched? What is this?
You were showing off about your drugs.
Yeah, I was a horrible little kid, and then I started smoking weed, and it just made me slightly more empathetic.
So were you,
than I
were
was
you like that when I first met you? Because you were a child when I first met you.
Yes.
You were an upstart, certainly, but I don't believe, as I recall, that I humoured that in any way. I think we did just take the piss out of you straight away.
Yeah, but that's what I loved most. But like so many times in interviews when I was young, they were like, how does the rest of the comedy circuit deal with you being so young? I'm like, they rip the ever-loving shit out of me.
Yeah, of course.
And nothing makes me feel more welcome.
Yeah.
It would be fucking worse if you walk into a room and know, especially comics who make jokes about everything.
Yeah.
If they're not making jokes about it, that's more disrespectful.
Yeah.
Because they don't think you can take the fucking banter.
Well, there's also the element though, isn't there? There's that more sinister aspect to it where people would be like, who the fuck is this child? Think he is coming into this grown-up industry, which is obviously born of jealousy ultimately.
Of
but I think it's quite an impressive feat really to break through that, because you could have been kicked out, you know what I mean? It could have been like, you're not coming in, fuck off.
I think I could have been kicked out, but I do also think that just more people than not were very, very supportive, like straight away. So many people did just sort of,
but we were all slanging you off behind your back.
And as long as it's behind my back, I don't care. Like, and you stop them all. To insult someone is to such a high form of compliment. Because what you're saying is you're like, I trust you to not take this personally.
Right.
Like, I trust you so much that you know what I'm about to say. I'm just saying to wind you up. I'm just going to be a dick.
I think you've misread it, Daniel. I think it was genuine hatred and dislike of you.
Then I remain blissfully unaware of
you. Until this moment. Yeah. This is how you find out. This
just over the years, I've been like, everyone really likes me on the circuit. They keep making fun of me. They keep throwing spitballs at me. It's
I don't believe, I'm pretty certain that I've never put the boot in on you at any point. I've always liked you, apart from the first time I met you.
What was that, we shape?
No, you weren't at all. In fact, I don't think I even met you.
Mm.
I think I just saw you. I think it was a gig in Soho or something. I remember it, and you were headlining the gig. And I think we did Peacock and Gamble at it. And I remember you wearing a leather jacket, and
that's all it takes, to be honest with Ian. Yeah, wearing a leather jacket, say no more.
That probably fed into it, but there was an element of just going, fuck that.
I used to have the fucking Justin Bieber long hair. Like, if I could go back in time and kick the shit out of myself, I absolutely would. Like, that's why everyone would go back in time to kill Hitler. I'd let him be. I would go back and just beat the ever-loving shit out of 19-year-old me. Like, old-school bully myself, just to, like, not too aggressive, but, like, trip myself up and then just not let me get back up.
Should've
knocking drinks out of his hands and stuff, just watching him cry. And I know he'll cry because he was me when I was 19.
Like, I know exactly how he'd react.
I know what he's insecure about. I can really fuck with that kid.
When I eventually did meet you, I actually think the first time I met you was probably an interview. I think we probably interviewed you, probably on the old podcast or something. It was probably the first time we ever sat down and actually spoke.
Up in Edinburgh.
And, you know, since I've never said a bad word about you at all, so it's not...
Well, thank you for not besmirching my name.
But I'd say that, wouldn't I?
I did say on this show today that we thought you'd be coming in here wearing some skinny jeans.
No,
I didn't say that.
I was never the skinny... I said that.
Well, I actually said that. I went, actually, that's not fair because I don't think he's actually part of that crowd.
No, I was never the skinny... I had the hairstyle. I had some of the look, but I was never the skinny jeans. I've always been an arrogant piece of shit.
Yeah, but you're also, I guess, one of the pioneers of this boy band comedy movement, even though that's not what you do on
that
stage.
It wasn't what I was doing, but when we were young, it was.
But it looks like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was me, Ian Sterling, Chris Ramsey, Joel Dommett, that sort of breed of just young, arguably attractive men if you've never seen Real Men before.
For insecure teenage girls.
Yeah.
How do you live in America?
I absolutely do not.
Okay, hold on a minute. I did not say that. I said, I wonder if he lives in America, because you've got a Conan or thing on your Twitter background. You're always over. They've done Conan like 50 times, haven't you?
Yeah, I go over a lot, but there's no amount of money that could ever fucking make me move to America.
Okay, fine.
I like visiting there. You pop in occasionally. It's fucking mental.
When's the last time you went to Kingston upon Thames? So you were born there. That's where I'm from.
I was. My mum's from East Kilbride. My dad's from Thurso, but they accidentally conceived me when they moved to London. Mm-hmm. And then at the age of four, I sounded like fucking Dick Van Dyke. I was like,
hello, mummy. Hello,
Hold
daddy.
On. That's not the accent of Kingston upon Thames.
But if you're inherently Scottish, that might be what
it sounded
like.
Right,
okay. But then at the age of four, my mum and dad were just like, we are not raising that fucking at all.
Oh, that's it on FUBAR Radio.
This is FUBAR Radio, the UK's largest ad-free unregulated radio network. And this is a special moment because on the line, Lizzie Cundy, is a sporting and broadcasting icon and a man who also is an excellent purveyor of the salted crisp snack. It's Gary Lineker. Gary, welcome to FUBAR.
Hello. Good afternoon, I think it is now.
Gary, hello. How lovely for you to join us. You are a sweetheart.
Pleasure, Lizzie.
Gary, it's great to have you on the show. Don't know where to start, but actually we had a friendly against Scotland, which was far from friendly, but a great result for England and a decent performance, it seems.
Yeah, I felt they played well. I mean, you don't learn too much from these all-British games because it's all a bit blood and thunder. But at the same time, I think it enhanced a few views that we already had about the emerging talent that England have. And, you know, I think the future's a lot brighter than perhaps it seemed a few months ago.
Gary, do you think England are missing some of the big characters like we used to have? And even the manager. Are you happy with Roy? Because we were just talking, saying I kind of miss the managers like the Terry Venables and even, you know, like Harry Redknapp that have a bit of charisma and a bit of character. Because are you happy with Roy?
Well, I think Roy's, you know, he had a tough World Cup, didn't he? And I think that he's, you know, he's a wily old fox. Roy's been around a long time and he's nurturing this young talent. I mean, it's not necessarily how you are as a character or a personality. It's how you are as a coach and a manager that's important.
You've achieved everything club level and also international level, performed with incredible, you know, aplomb of, in an England shirt. The question is, though, Gary, what do you need from your national team manager that you wouldn't necessarily be getting from a club manager? When you hook up with the England squad, what is it that is the brief of the England manager in terms of getting the best out of his players?
Well, I don't think it's too dissimilar in terms of producing the best out of your players. I think it's all about instilling belief into your players, because the pressure's a lot higher international level. You know, people say players don't care about playing for their country like they used to do, this, that and the other, which is complete nonsense. Of course they do. They realise it's the biggest stage. It's where ultimately their careers will be judged. And, you know, they're hugely motivated, as we saw against Scotland, against other countries. Sometimes we try too hard, is the truth of the matter, and that inhibits the way you play, and because you've got to be relaxed and motivated at the same time. Now, what an international manager must do is work out which players can cope with that extra pressure, and then make, I suppose, the environment around them to make it comfortable enough for them to perform and make them believe in themselves and get them out there. So it's not too dissimilar from club management, except for the fact that they don't get them very often. They don't have long with them. So
it's
hard to get those sort of relationships.
Is it not just a sort of charismatic figure that just gets you up for the games? Because clearly, as you're suggesting there, they don't have the input. They can't really, you know, burden the players with too many new ideas, given that they spend very little time together. Is it not just a case of getting them motivated and just say, go for it, express yourself and hopefully have the right tactics?
This whole motivational thing is a terribly English complaint. it's, you know, football is all about being calm. It's understanding what you're doing, being in control. It's all about keeping the ball. It's all about tactical awareness. We in England think it's all about being gung-ho. Let's boot the ball at the other end. Let's get stuck in. And all this nonsense that is the reason why we're not successful when it comes to major tournaments, because we're stuck in this sort of dark age tactical ground where we think that that's the way to play, or our supporters do. But gradually, I think we're changing that. Our passing statistics and possession statistics are improving year by year. We're starting to teach our young kids to play football properly rather than just launch it. And because of that, we're seeing this emergence of young talent coming through. Now, the one thing we don't want to do is just criticise them for not getting stuck in and all this nonsense that keeps us so far behind the other nations.
Mm. Yeah. And by the way, Wayne Rooney, you know, on the score sheet again, 2 goals. Mm. We've got a strange relationship as a public towards Wayne Rooney. It seems to be a bipolar relationship. It's sort of a love-hate. What is our problem with Wayne Rooney, who is arguably our only truly world-class player in an England shirt?
Well, I think that's the same with any, you know, most players as they go through their careers. You know, as soon as you have a bad patch for England, everybody's on your back. Pressure's so high, but that's what you have to deal with. And Rooney's dealt with it well over his career. Like, he burst onto the scene in 94 in the Euros. In 2004, I should say, to show my age. In 2004.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville on FUBAR Radio.
We've got an R&B legend in the house right now. Someone who... I used to put your songs on mixtapes. You got me a lot of sex, basically. Yeah. You got me a lot of sex in the past, you know what I mean? It's an absolute honour to have
you
come through.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
So I'll just introduce you as the fucking king of R&B for me, Donald Jones, man.
Appreciate it.
Comments floating around about who the king of R&B is. I'm sure you're aware of that. But yeah, like I said, no one kind of I hold in as high esteem as you when it comes to slow jams, R&B. I've got my mate outside who I speak to quite often. He's like a brother to me. And he will know how much we appreciate your music, man.
Man, I appreciate that, man. I mean, you know, there's so many kings in this R&B thing. You know, you got to take your hat off to people like Joe.
That era, Genuine, Joe, John B, obviously.
Yeah, man, John B, man, Genuine. There's just so many great artists that has come.
Mm. Right. Yeah, what do you think's changed? For me, like, there were so many greats back then, both R&B groups and solo R&B stars. And
I don't think there's many like that individuals anymore. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I think the message in the music has changed.
This is a good point, because you are all about love, which is why you're a perfect guest.
Love, just before relationships, makeups, breakups. I mean, love ain't going nowhere. That's universal. That's God.
Yeah.
We can all get sex and all of that. You know, we can talk about that, but the love, the makeup, relationships, breakup, those things, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the type of stuff I like to talk about.
Yeah, you got me a lot of love as well, by the way. I did say sex, but you know what I mean? Sex sells.
Oh, yeah. Sex sells, too.
Interesting fact I found out about one of your hits. It was the first number one on the Billboard charts of the 21st century.
Yeah, man. It was the first and the last. Last number one record, and it brought in the millennium. You know what's up?
That's the sixth.
So, yeah, I guess that's going to be one of those trivia questions or something like that.
That will
you know?
Be, yeah. I'm sure that's been on quizzes. Yeah. You know? If it ever comes up in our pub quiz, then we'll know the answer now.
Yeah, that's a blessing, and I'm glad that the universe seemed fit that I brought in the new millennium.
Yeah. You're also one of those artists that, before coming out in your own right as an artist, you're a prolific writer as well, and you've written for like Usher, 702, which you know not as many people will know, not as many people as Usher's fans. You know, they won't have as many fans as Usher, but the writing that you were doing for other artists, was that before kind of breaking out on your own?
Yeah, that was actually before. I wrote on Usher's first album. I worked with Silk, 702. I worked with Brownstone. I worked with a few artists, man. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
That was before I became an artist myself. That's how I got my big break.
Would you say that is your favorite aspect of being an artist, the writing itself? Because you've got such a knack for writing about love.
I would say writing and producing. That's my favorite thing. And then actually going on stage and being able to perform your own songs in front of a crowd and see how they react to it and participate with it. I mean, all three, to be honest with you,
But production as well is another string that you've got.
Oh, yeah, production, that's my love right there, you know. All of them, man. Anything that has to do with music, man, I love.
Are there plans for another release anytime soon?
I'm actually, man, I got the bug. I was fortunate enough to work on Jacquees' new album.
Sick.
I did a song on there called 23, and that kind of like gave me the bug to be like, okay, I'm ready to make another album.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I kind of took a little bit break because me and my wife, we had a son. Stayed at home and watched my son grow, so he's 3. So now I feel like, you know, it's time for me to get back out here and do what I got to do.
And how about your son? Do you like him to kind of carry on your legacy?
I want him to do whatever is in his heart.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
Hiya, I'm Harriet Rose. I'm here with Steph London. How's it going, babe?
I'm good.
You're looking fly, as always.
Thank you. I just came on a cash vibe today.
So did I. Yeah. I tried to, like, dress in my coolest outfit so that you'd think I wasn't not cool.
You look very cool.
Ah, yes. I'm going to keep that and use it as a quote for, like, my Twitter bio. Steph London said I was a little bit cool.
No, very cool.
Oh, very cool. Very. Sick. Obviously, breakfast in bed is an important thing for you. So what can I do to make you the best breakfast in bed, darling, if I ever got the opportunity?
Okay, let me start by I love planting. You know, if your food is rubbish and you just put a little bit of planting there, mm-hmm. and it's just all nice. You know what planting is.
I had it at like a market and I bought it. Just came in like a big pile and I ate it in about 13 seconds.
Did you? You're funny. So I'm vegetarian and this is difficult.
Fake bacon.
What's that?
I don't know. Maybe we can make some fake bacon.
Vegetarian bacon would be nice.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get you some fake bacon for our breakfast in bed, okay?
Yeah.
You've done a lot of sick videos. I really, really liked the Jax Jones video. I wanted to know how happy you were about being on the back of a horse. Is that something you're natural with?
Yeah, no, I didn't mind. Well, I've been on a horse before when I was really young. And then that was my first time in adulthood. At first, I thought you want me to get on a horse. I thought I was going to break the horse back, like Rick Rouse.
You look sick on the horse.
Yeah, you know what? Everyone says that. But I actually had practice just before. But then the guy who was teaching me, he was so cool and so down to earth. And he made me feel so comfortable and confident. And I thought, if I fought anyway, I'm just going to claim bare money anyways.
I feel like maybe you should integrate like horses into your life more, like maybe just go day to day to stuff on the back of a horse.
Do you think?
I really think that it was swag out.
Yeah, I don't mind. I love horses.
So do I. Except I'm just a little bit scared they're going to kick me in the face at all times.
No, they won't. That's ponies or something.
Will you protect me?
If I'm there, yeah, why not?
So out of all the videos you've done so far, they've all been sick, but which is your favourite? What are you going to name as your favourite so far?
I would have to say Real Thing. Every time I look at that video, I just feel like it's so lit. I just want to relive it again. The day was so lit. Who would have thought you could have so much fun without guys? There were just bare girls there. I had like 60
It's
girls.
All about girl power, though.
And it was all getting along. Where do you ever see 60 girls getting along? It was so much fun. Everyone was excited. There were so many girls in the video with colourful hair.
It was a beautiful video as well.
Thank you.
Well shot. It just seems like you're always bossing it in videos, which I'm going to come back to that question a bit because I need to learn how to be a bit more of a boss. You always dress sick. You say you're casual right now, but you look so legit. So I wanted to talk to you a bit about iconic dresses because there's been a few over the years, you know? So I wanted you to have a look at some pictures of some iconic dresses. Just let me know what you think. So up first, we've got Missy Elliott, okay, on the left there. She's wearing a purple leather toothpiece with crisscross orange. Mm-hmm. It looks like she's accepting some awards there. What are you thinking about Missy Elliott in that shot?
I think for Missy, the swag is perfect.
Yes. Up next, we've got Cher. Cher is wearing some kind of outfit that looks a little bit like a bird.
I'll say peacock.
But like a
beautiful.
Yeah.
This is definitely not hurting me, and her belly is beautiful.
Washboard abs, right?
Cher, you are amazing.
We got Britney and Justin up next in their classic denim.
Britney and Justin, I know this was in 1985 or whatever, but this is hurting me.
It's hurting me. And next door, you've got Posh and Bex.
Oh, this is not hurting me. They look like the mafia. They look
Don't
gang.
They look sick? All leather?
Like gang, all leather.
I was going to say all pleather, but it probably was definitely leather, knowing Posh and Bex, right?
Nah, it looks sick. Is this how long they've been together? So sweet.
And up next, we've got Linked One, Spice Girls, on the left there.
Spice Girls, I could say some of y'all are good, some of y'all don't.
I like Vicky B.
Vicky B.
Emma B.
Mel C. This is slightly hurting me.
See ya. Oh, you got Lil' Kim on the end there.
Lil' Kim, I would say you're hurting me, but the only reason you're hurting me is because my eyes just can't take this beauty, girl.
She's only got one boob out.
You can't take it. Boy, silly boob, that's her. Boy, yes, Lil' Kim.
So you're obviously a Don. How can I become more of a Don in Steph London's eyes?
Okay, so step one. I don't have no steps. That would always be cool, right? Some steps. To be a Don, mm-hmm. first and foremost, you got to be confident.
That's the visualization of
and
confidence.
And honest, because liars do not look good.
No, hate liars.
They're very weak. No lie. You tell the truth. Unless you really need to.
Steph London, ladies and gentlemen, spitting the truth. Or maybe not. We're not sure.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
We're joined in the studio by legitimate megastar Ramesh Ranganathan. But before we do that, we've just got to read out some of our fan mail. So, happy Valentine's Day, my Sherry Amours. What are you handsome guys up to later? I'm taking my cock and balls out for dinner. Hello, Nikki and Natty. Can you feel the love today? I can't, but would feel better if, for the love of God, you call me a cunt. You've really let yourself down on the cunt ratio this year, Nick. I have. You went a whole show without saying it once. Sad. D-Rump. D-Rump, you are a cunt. Hello, I'd like a fight this afternoon. Would you fancy this part of a boxing place? I'm quite tasty, FYI, Sam. No, not really.
What is this fan mail?
I don't know.
People have just written in.
Weird vibe you've got.
Have you ever had any fan mail, Mom? It's a little bit like when someone thinks that you're worth following and hanging out. People that admire you, they write to you.
It does happen, but they don't request that I say specific words.
I get that. Hey, can you call my girlfriend a cunt on the phone? And you go, yeah, sure.
And you don't. She probably cries, didn't she?
You've got no idea of the context of that.
No, I don't.
Can you call my girlfriend a cunt? You know, that could be abuse, and you're sort of facilitating that. You've got no idea of the thing that she wants.
I'm not put up a trestle table and inviting people over. People just stop me in the street.
I'm absolute tipping point. The one thing that really pushed me over is if Nick Helm called me a cunt, and he made that happen.
One time, someone gave me the phone and said, can you call my girlfriend a cunt? And I did. And then, as I was walking away, they said, hang on a minute, you're off uncle. So we're joined in the studio by Ramesh Ranganathan. Natalie, all of our microphones, I think everything sounds a bit quiet. I don't know how to turn my headphones up.
He is driving the desk, yeah,
it's just quieter than it normally is. I mean, that's too loud, isn't it? You haven't given me the tools. I mean, I'm not fucking... Yeah, right, well, you haven't fucking shown me, have you, for fuck's sake?
Jesus,
You haven't given me the fucking tools to actually work my own fucking desk.
Fucking hell, man. What is this?
What do you mean, what is this?
Talk to people like that.
What do you mean, don't talk to fucking people like that?
She just came in and literally twiddled one knob.
She turned
the
knob as loud as she fucking...
pay attention to the one knob she's
doing. Because I'm hosting a fucking radio show. As soon as I stop talking, so does he.
You didn't watch the knob because you were fucking drinking your tea, you prick.
I was trying to drink some fucking tea to keep my mouth lubricated so that I can ask you the fucking important questions about your fucking tour. You're on here with our fucking five listeners to fucking promote your sellout tour. Has it started yet?
Well, sort of last night started, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Started back.
So that was the first date of your tour?
It's kind of,
When's your second date? Tonight?
Tonight, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, good luck with that. Now on to some more fan mail. Hello, you silly guys. I get very anxious leaving the house and getting on public transport and doing anything, right? Yeah. Regardless of whether you get recognised for anything or not, just as a human being. Going to see your show with the one ticket that you gave me, by the way. So
well, that's
how
many
that.
You asked for.
I didn't ask for
six and see how it goes.
I didn't ask for any number of tickets. You
I'll
asked
give you
me
as many tickets as you like.
You asked me to come to see you, and I did go and see you, and you gave me one fucking ticket the day before Valentine's Day. Thank you very much for your fucking...
I just sort of took a punt.
What, I would be alone?
Yes, basically.
You just sort of took a punt. You just sort of assumed.
I just sort of thought, what's the most likely one, number of tickets
he's
going to
need?
Do
you know what's more of an insult than that? I sat next to an empty seat all night.
Did you?
Yeah, fucking hell.
Sorry, mate.
That's all right. I put my bag in it and I got off with it in half time.
That's been nice for the people that recognise you. So what's happened to Nick Helm? Is he on his own? Tongue-kissing a rucksack.
I was in a queue for a drink at the interval. And it's your audience, isn't it? Mm. And a guy...
Well, I can tell this is going to be a bad story.
No, just a guy turned around and he goes, oh, I really enjoyed that reluctant landlord thing that you did. What's your character called? And I was like, Lemon. yeah, great. Those guys at the bar, they were genius. I was like, thanks. Been up to anything else? And I was like, oh no. And so I got my drink, got back down to my seat, and in front of me there were these three guys. And then this guy turned around to me because he was taking his coat off, and he looked at me and he froze, and I was just like, Don't do it. Don't do it. We're in an enclosed. I'm on my own. Okay, it's not front row. But I think it's one of the best seats in the house. It was row U at Alexandra Palace, and it's basically at the back of the raked bit.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't have wanted to see you. Not because of who you are, but just sort of, you know, when a mate's in, you sort of don't want to.
I don't mind. I like seeing people that I know in the audience because you just think everyone else is fucking not enjoying it. At least my friends know to pretend to be enjoying it. And this guy turned around and saw me and went, like, I was like, and he went, lemon! And I was like, uh-huh. They go, you're lemon! You're lemon! And he turned around to his friends and goes, it's lemon! And they all looked and they went, no. All their phones lit up.
They Googled you.
And they Googled me, and then not one of them turned back around again to double check to see if it was indeed lemon. Mm. And all I was thinking for the second half of your show was, what a waste of a decade. Fucking hell. I mean, they were a comedy audience. They were on the way in. I heard people saying, Jimmy Carr's on. Oh, we went to see that guy who plays the uncle in... And I was thinking, oh, no! Gavin and Stacey. Rob Brydon. Yeah, Rob Brydon plays the uncle in Gavin and Stacey. Oh, we'll go and see him. We're going to go and see him. And I'm stood there, bold as brass, in front of everyone, yeah. Recognised by two people. Mm. So all I'm saying is that your audience aren't particularly comedy literate.
Okay. I don't mind that.
Jack D was one of my all-time favourite comedians, and I think you're very much our generation's Jack D.
Thank you.
You are, honestly, one of my favourite comedians. Well, we know each other. I've known you before you were big and famous.
Yes, correct.
I've always liked you. You've always been a friend to me, but also...
Sounds sinister. Why are you saying it sounds sinister?
Well,
if you
I'm
don't
just like saying. So it's just, but you've turned into kind of like one. Well, I'm just saying you're one of my favourite comedians.
Thank you, Nick.
But it's kind of like I would say that a lot of my. I mean, Nat Metcalfe is one of my favourite comedians. Mm.
You're sort of saying that it's to take the gloss off it or off the accolade?
No, I'm just like saying...
Just to put that in context. Matt Metcalf's also one of my favourite comedians. Just in case you get a little bit above your station.
He's right there.
I mean, taking the gloss off it. I mean, I'm right here as well.
I mean, who's been more insulting to who?
No, it's just the way you
fucking
said
hell,
it.
You can't fucking share. You can't fucking share the ball pit with anyone,
no,
can
I'm
you?
I'm happy to share the ball
no,
pit.
No, fucking I mean, hell. It's just all like, as soon as Nat got invited to the party, you were like, fucking... Metcalf, you took a bit of the fucking shine off your fucking compliment. Oh, you're just handing them out to anyone, are you?
It's
fucking hell.
It's the fucking way you said it, Nick.
Nah, fuck you.
It's the way you said it.
Fucking hell.
Jesus.
Hello, you silly guys. I love this show. I want to love it more. I think I would if you started talking about Nick Nolte more. Starting now, please. He came up the other day. I looked.
What is this?
I looked at a picture of my passport photo and I described it as, it looks like that photo of Nick Nolte. That mug shot that he got. I looked like an Italian porn star for 10 years and now I look like Nick Nolte's mugshot.
I went to get my passport renewed a while ago and the woman at the passport office, she told me that my previous passport was so dark that it probably was illegal. She's quite awkward about it. Because obviously it's a difficult thing to get across. But what she was saying is that it's difficult to tell the difference between you and sort of any Asian man with a similar silhouette, basically.
You look like a thumbprint.
Yeah, essentially.
Does she need to have that conversation?
Well, I sort of thought, I don't know why you've mentioned this, because that passport's done.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, did she know you? This new passport.
Did she know you off the telly?
No. She was just sort of saying, just so you know, you've been travelling illegally for a decade. Just wanted to put that
so
in.
So she wasn't like just like saying, oh, you're that Ramesh.
No.
You'll get a kick out of it. She was literally just saying.
She was saying it in a very matter of fact way.
Oh, wow. But you've got a new passport?
Yes.
So why does it matter?
Exactly. Why does it matter?
Because it's illegal now anyway. You can't use your old passport.
True. Regardless of the darkness.
But yeah, regardless of it.
Darkness.
Not the band, the colour of his face.
I went to get a visa at the US embassy. You have to get like some documentation to say that you've got a specific talent that gets you a visa or whatever. And the guy said to me, it says here that you've got a talent or you're talented. In what way? And then I said, I'm a comedian. And he said, well, you haven't been very funny in this conversation. So it's because I'm trying to get a visa. I didn't realise I had to do a bit. Do you know what I mean? It was like super fucking awkward. And then you sort of get put under pressure to then try and be funny for the rest of the interaction. Do you know what I mean? It's awful. So bad.
Have you done your gig in Sri Lanka yet?
I think it's going to be next year now. The Sri Lankan promoter was over in the UK and came to watch the tour show in Newcastle. Let's just say I don't know if that Sri Lanka gig still happening.
Row and Chill with Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Johanna James, Noel Clark from FUBAR Radio. We're with The Big Show.
By the way, did you know I'm number two in the box office right now?
You love tooting that horn, don't you?
I'm just
give me a high five.
You know what?
If I was number two in the box office, I'd toot my horn,
yeah,
too.
Man.
I want to know what your next movie project is.
I'm represented by APA out in L.A., Jeff Witches.
Me too. APA.
Fantastic.
Another one.
So Jeff's my agent. We've done some stuff. I've done a couple of readings for Marvel. I don't know if I look anything like the characters, but getting into that Marvel family, you got to get introduced to them. They got, you know, and you know, the more reads you do for more casting directors, the more they get to know you, the more they get to learn you. It's hard because right away you're typecasted. They look at you and, oh, well, you're a big intimidating guy. Well, yeah, but also I can throw down. I can act. You got to find the right opportunity. I have a TV series that may be coming up this fall that I'm really excited about. That'd be a good opportunity for me. And we're just considering some other projects and seeing what's going on. It's a lot of your talent. It's a lot of who you know and how you meet them and how do you get to know them, because they're going to take a risk on you. Because you got to figure it's a business venture. They're taking a risk on you to pull this character off and enhance the script or enhance this character. Yeah. There's so many great actors out there that are applying for the same job. Yeah. It's a toss-up.
Is it something that a lot of the WWE superstars are glad about now, where you have not only WWE Studios with Michael Luisi, but you have the fact that a lot of the stars, like The Rock and Stone Cold earlier, now John and yourself and are crossing over into movies?
I think who's really transcending that for us has been Rock. Because I remember 20 years ago, nobody would talk to you in Hollywood. You know, they just wouldn't do it. Because you were a wrestler, they didn't want anything to do with it, and rightly so.
Yeah. There was only very few, wasn't it? Like,
there was very few, but you weren't getting involved in any really big projects. Yeah. You know what I mean? Most of the projects that the guys did back then, they had friends and producers that produced a movie for them to do. The difference is now is Rock has really gone out there and paved the way for us in showing our work ethic, our willingness to work with other people, our commitment, which is ingrained by us. I don't think people understand, unless you've been around WWE and been backstage and seen the work level that our talent's capable of.
We have done that.
You know what I mean? And you look at guys like Miz. Okay, now Miz is a smart ass on TV, but Miz is one of the hardest working guys you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
Very dedicated, very friendly, never complains about anything. You strap a dump truck to his back and tell him to walk it 3 blocks, he'll be like, okay, and he'll go do it.
Yeah.
That's the kind of work attitude that you know in Hollywood is very important. You need to get along with your co-stars, your fellow actors, your director, be respectful, show up on time and work hard, know your lines.
Yeah.
Our guys are going to do that. You know, you see the success that Rock's had. They see the success that Batista's had in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, amazing.
Batista knocked it out of the park.
Amazing.
And, you know, Dave was one of those guys that made a difficult transition where he was really popular at the time. He was one of the top heels we had, but he felt in his gut, I need to make this transition now. And Dave did it. So, yeah, he started with a couple of small films, and then, you know, he did well in those, and he hit a home run with Guardians.
Yeah.
So when those kind of guys are proven entities that deliver, you're going to look in the same pond maybe for another potential, and it makes it easier to take a risk. That's the boat I'm in now. Yeah, I've been the Big Show for 20-something years. That's cool. But now I need to go in, sit down, meet with these people, let them know that I'm a human being, that, you know, I've got experiences, and I can give you A to Z, then find the right parts they're willing to take a risk on, because it's a risk and investment.
I don't know if you noticed this, but I'm black.
Okay, so someone talk to me about this, because I wasn't aware of this.
Yeah, right, I know, right?
Anyway.
And, you are, aren't you?
Yeah, something even more shocking, she's a woman. Right?
Really?
Yeah.
So, of course.
Actually, I got to be honest with you, I knew that right away. Sorry.
My quick being, how do you guys, and WWE is great at it, but how do you guys, and what sort of advice do you give to people that have differences? You know,
diversity? I think anybody that's different, that brings a uniqueness. We're all unique our own way, whether we're black, white, short, tall, fat, skinny.
So I guess I'm saying, how do we teach children to embrace that, do you think?
We all are different, and you have to embrace your differences, embrace your gifts. If anyone puts a limit on you and says you can't do something, you're the one that's making a mistake by listening to them.
Yeah.
If you want to be a WWE superstar, there's opportunities here for you to be a superstar. If you want to be part of this program, there's opportunities for everyone. It doesn't matter of ethnicity. We are actively recruiting all over the world, from China, Japan, South Africa, Australia, Europe. We want diversity because we're a worldwide product.
Yeah.
Diversity makes things better. If you have all carbon copy the same thing, it becomes very stale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is life stale? Life's not stale. Diversity is what all the little chemicals and the neurons, electrons, everything bouncing off each other. That's what makes things happen, because everything's unique and diverse, and that's what makes the magic happen. And you know, the more diversity you have, the more energy you have flowing, the better the project is.
Yeah. I think it's good for people, because you guys have your Don't Be a Bully, Be a Star campaign.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's good for listeners and people to hear you say that, because obviously, like, we know everyone is different, but I think sometimes young people have a hard time.
Well, another thing, too, is that part of the Be a Star program, they have, you know, guidelines and building their chapters. But one thing, when I talk to the kids about how important it is for them, hey, if somebody's being bullied, step up and help. Contact a respected adult, a teacher. Yeah. The other thing is, too, is a lot of things we overlook in those bully situations is, yes, the kid being bullied is a victim, but also the child doing the bullying is really crying for help. Yeah. How many times we know in those situations that a bully is really crying for help? Yeah. There's something going on somewhere. Whatever it is, this kid is emotionally acting out because something is troubling that child, because that's not natural human behavior.
Yeah.
If anything, we're about pulling together and fighting for the underdog and rising above. We fought disease and famine and thousands of years of evolution to get to where we are.
Yeah.
So if something's against the norm and there's this bully, then what's going on in this kid's life? What's happening in this kid's life?
Yeah.
So by telling, you're not getting the bully in trouble. In all actuality, in a situation where you're helping the bully find out what's wrong. And if you get it early enough, maybe you can correct this young man's path or young woman's path, and they go on to a better professional existence.
Very good point. I wanted to ask you a little bit about behind the scenes, because we've come
I am not walking around in my underwear. It's not happening.
Damn it! No,
you pervert.
We often come back after a show. We watch a show.
With the amazing Mr. Sean Selman.
With Mr.
Sean Selman, yes.
And then we luckily get to come back and meet you guys. But we were like amazed. We're like, it feels just like a film set back here. You've got roadies and everyone's half in costume. And like the family-ness that I can sense.
Yeah, it's that way. Yeah.
Are there any kind of like back behind the scenes stories or anything?
People ask me all the time, says, oh, do you really like so-and-so? Do you really hate so-and-so? It's like any other job. Do you like everybody you work with? No. But you're professional and you do your job. Yeah, there are going to be heated rivals here and there because we're all competitive. That's going to happen naturally. We're competitive individuals. But when you spend the amount of time that we spend together, 4 or 5 days a week, 290 days a year, all over the world, you got a family. You're going to know when, you know, so-and-so's mad, or boyfriend, she's not having a good day. Or
it's like fine with your brother or sister.
It's weird because you can tell when people are having troubles and maybe they need a hug or maybe they need to talk or maybe they need to be left alone.
Yeah.
So, and most all of us are really good. I'm sure you guys are the same way being actors. Your therapy is your work. So when you get into your work, you might be upset, angry, pissed off, sad, depressed, but once you get into your performance, afterwards, you're like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
And I think that's what all of us, we function well at. We're able to take our frustrations, our stresses, and we get to release that energy in a positive way out there in our performance. And I'm not talking about yelling or screaming, but just even the fact of performing in front of the fans and giving them that match or that segment, that's the awesome feeling. You can't trade for anything.
No.
People talk about skydiving. I've never skydived. I'm not insane. I'm not falling out of a perfectly good airplane for nothing. It's not happening. Tom Cruise hanging on the side of an airplane, good for him. I don't have the balls to do it. Not happening.
I'm with you, man. How many black people you see get killed by sharks?
No.
We don't do that shit. How many black people die on Everest? None. Because we ain't climbing mountains in the cold.
Okay, wait. No, LL Cool J stabbed a shark in the eye.
Yeah.
He lived.
The Hannah Whitten Show on FUBAR Radio.
Have Juno Dawson
Hello.
With me. Cheers, cheers, cheers,
cheers.
Juno is an amazing YA young adult author, writer.
Correct.
And journalist. Oh. And you've done like non-fiction as well and stuff. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Haribo.
And wine.
Haribo and wine.
What could anybody
I know.
Want?
Normally I like go for crisps during the show and then by the end I'm like so bloated. But I feel like sugar might be a little bit better.
It's going to get us through.
Yeah. I know, just going to be like, woo! By the end. Absolutely mental.
Oh,
all right, Juno, are you ready to play a game of Dirty Talk?
Yes, you'll have to tell me how this happens.
Okay.
Let's do it.
You got to throw yourself fully into this because
okay,
it can get weird. Okay, so the way that Dirty Talk works is we are basically going to simulate phone sex.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to call you up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a good little chat. And these pieces of paper, these turned up pieces of paper in front of us, have got random words on them.
Mm-hmm.
So during our conversation, we have to take it in turns to turn them over, and then we have to, in whatever we're saying, include that word in the sentence in that. Okay, you ready?
Are you going to tell me when to turn over the pieces of paper?
No, you can just, we'll take it in turns. So I'll do
okay.
one and then you do one, but like, just kind of like, keep
right.
it flowing.
I've never been very good at phone sex. Is this,
me neither.
This is why I don't do long distance relationships. Okay,
it's fine.
Let's go.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Got some sexy music. All right. I'm going to call you up. Bring, bring. Bring, bring.
Hello.
Hi, Juno. It's Hannah.
Hi, Hannah.
I was just thinking about you.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking about you and your last eruption. Oh, yeah, baby.
Oh, my God. That was a Vesuvius-level eruption. Everybody drowned.
Oh, yeah. I love drowning. Gets me off.
Wanted to give you a riddle.
Oh, yeah?
And the riddle I've been thinking is, what's so hot it's dangerous?
Is it... Is the answer Juno Dawson?
Oh, my God, yes. How did you know?
Because you're so hot and dangerous, baby. And you're so crafty, too. Crafty, crafty minx.
I am crafting right now.
Oh, what are you crafting?
A scrapbook of pictures of Hannah Witten.
Oh, my God, don't show the internet.
I wouldn't. What we have...
Those are for your eyes only.
Is just for you and me. Some of the pictures are also of antiques.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know how much you love a good nude antique. Just me, naked, and a vase. Holding that sweet seat vase. And this is a word I don't know. So I'm just going to pretend it's a different word. Because what you also love is when I smash up those vases and cause absolute chaos. That's not the word on the
what
card.
What's the word? Can you spell it out?
C-H-O-A-S.
Oh, I think that might be chaos spelled incorrectly.
Well, you know that
bad spelling turns me
on. This game is absolute chaos, and I know that you love it when shit goes wrong.
And do you know why that is, Hannah?
Why is that, Juno?
Because I'm greedy for chaos.
And also chips. Oh, yeah. Well, you know how I love to eat food after making sweet, sweet love?
Sometimes during.
Even better.
Chippy.
I was about to say pour gravy on me, but gravy wasn't even like a word that was down. It actually just came to my head.
Also, I'm seeing scalding. That's a burning room. And that's when we had to go to A&E with the gravy scald.
Oh my God. I fucking love that game. That's so
ridiculous.
Do you think
there's anybody out there getting off on this? That would be amazing.
I fucking hope so. I was into it.
Vase chat. Some of my spicy vase chat.
It's now planted in my head that I want to do a naked photo shoot with just, like, loads of, like, vases. Antiques around me. Imagine.
Sexy armoire. That's a good word.
I know.
A good
how
word.
Funny would that be, though? Imagine me in Downton Abbey, but nude.
Nude Downton Abbey.
Are you okay?
I've got cramp. I'm just going to... Right, you talk. I'm just going to walk it off.
Okay, Juno's walking it off.
That weird. Do you know, actually, should I tell you what it is? It's because I didn't want to wait for the lift at Caledonian Road, so I think I've actually possibly pulled a muscle in my leg walking up 156 stairs, which I remember because that's what the sign said.
Yeah.
That hurts.
Covent Garden's the worst one, though.
You never do that. That's
don't.
Only fools would do that.
Unless you know that you are, like, in peak physical fitness and you're better than everyone.
Yeah. Like, you're a cross-training marathon.
I'm pretty
running.
Sure I have done it before.
I wanted to make my mum do it as well, because it was going to be really easy. Whoops.
Yeah. You Fine do it mom. Once, and then you're like, never again. Never again.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
Afro B is on the phone. How's it going, man?
Yo, what's good, man? Afro B in the building.
How you feeling? Congratulations on the release of Afro Wave 3. It looks like everybody's going nuts for it, but how's it been for you, though?
Yeah, man, it's been very good. I feel like it was the right time for this to happen. And, yeah, I'm happy with the response.
It's got some crazy collaborators on there. You've got T-Pain on there, like Vybz Kartel. It's like, you're always a collaborator. You've had Team Salute, of course, working on so many songs with them. They've been in FUBAR. We love them so much. They obviously produced the banger that is Drogba. Did you get in the studio with all of the people on the record, or was some of
it... most of it's like over email, but we talk on social media.
Yeah.
So Drogba was like the fishing rod to bring them towards me, and then, yeah, we just made that connection.
sick. I mean, talking of Drogba, it's insane. It's now got over 48 million views just on YouTube and over 100 million streams across the board. Does it feel like that was the moment that really it kind of popped off for you, like overseas, like the US?
100%. Like, if you go to New York right now, that's like the main Afro song you're going to hear on radio, like in the clubs. Like, is that go-to African song? So I'm just glad that that's the song that's representing the continent at the moment.
Absolutely. But are you sick of it yet?
I'm not really, you know. When I perform it to a new crowd, I just get that feeling again. But, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't play it to myself, though.
I know what you mean. It's that shared energy, isn't it? It's like you feel their love for it kind of keeps you going.
Exactly.
But it's one of the things as an artist, right, you have to kind of deal with the fact that, you know, it's obviously bittersweet sometimes that when one of your most favourite songs becomes huge and then it's like that is the song that you hear so often. So it can become a little bit grating, but actually it's too good to grate. It's too good.
To be honest, every artist would want one that kind of song, that go-to song that they can perform anywhere.
Absolutely. And how does it feel, obviously, now you've released Afrowave 3, in the sort of journey of your career with Afrowave 1 and 2, how have you changed as an artist? Do you see a change from Afrowave to Afrowave 2?
100%. Because during 1 and 2, I was still kind of fairly new to the whole music artist thing, but I'm still, like, Afrowave 3 shows the growth and, like, the whole journey from when I first started 5 years ago until now. So that's why I wanted to showcase that with this project.
It's a nice kind of 360, isn't it? Because you have now seen that. I mean, you are one of the most prolific parts of the surge of Afrowave music here and now in the States, which is, I mean, for a guy from South London, is that still crazy for you, or have you settled into that feeling of knowing
that's
you've
crazy.
Gone?
You know what? Nothing's really hit me yet, though. I'm just having fun with the journey. I'm just enjoying, like, just seeing the different countries and stuff. So, yeah, I'm just taking it as it comes.
And on a personal note, how do you keep your beard looking so good?
Beard drip on the way.
Literally.
Me and my boy were working on a product for the beards out there.
Serious? Is it going to be called Afro Beard?
Well, Beard Drip.
Oh, Beard Drip.
But the name can change.
Listen, I'm just thinking, you put Afro B and then E-A-R-D is in small. Is in
that
small.
Can work.
Do you know what I mean? You can have that. I will take 10% though. Nah, man, it's always really on point. I'm always very impressed. I mean, obviously, we're not in the same room right now, but I can feel the beard's energy from here.
You're making me turn red right now.
Listen, there is nothing wrong with a beautiful beard, my friend.
You know what? I'm not 6 foot, so I need other things, you know what I'm saying?
Listen, it's working for you. Whatever you're doing, it's working for you, hun. Listen, what's the plans for the next... Now it's dropped, what's the plans for the next few months?
I'm just going to work it in every territory I can, every country I can, drop visuals to the songs on there, especially the T-Pain one and the international features. And, just keep working as much as possible. I feel like there's a lot of potential singles on there.
Absolutely.
So 2020, I'm just going to work the hell out of it.
I want to see Cardi B...
I feel that's coming, you know. I feel like that's going to come soon.
Well, it's already happened, so, like, it's bound to happen again, you know.
Yeah,
this album is going to bring that vibe. She obviously loves it. We need to get it in her ears, and she'll know. She can kind of pick the ones that she's going to bop down to, and then you'll know. You know they're the bangers.
Man. For sure.
Mate, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much. Next time we're going to get together properly. In the same room.
You can see the beard live in the flesh.
Listen, I want to see it. I want to take pictures of it. And I cannot wait for your new line of beard products. You call it Afro B with a small eared.
Don't worry, 50%.
Oh my God, that means it's never going to happen because you just offered 50%. Listen, good luck with everything, man.
Bless. Ian Bolton.
KSI and Randolph.
Randolph?
Randolph.
Randolph.
Like, that's a bad intro, isn't it? That's a terrible intro. Look, can you hear him? He's shouting. He's furious. Are you there, KSI?
Yo, what's up?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
Just very quickly, what's the backstory with Logan Paul?
So, pretty much, after I beat Joe Weller, I called out Logan Paul to fight, and we had a bit of back and forth, and then we decided to fight each other.
So you were a rapper?
He does it all.
So wait, let me get straight. Sorry, hi, it's Ian here, my show. So why are you having fights with people?
Well, I mean, obviously, I got to show that I'm the best boxing YouTuber on YouTube. So it's kind of like, you know...
Can I become a boxing radio presenter?
Yeah, please.
Can I fight people?
I mean, you definitely should. Like, there's definitely a gap in the market there.
Hang on a minute.
Okay.
Just quickly, so which one of these gentlemen on here is KSI? I'm asking someone in the studio.
Bandela.
On the left?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
They did train for this boxer.
Okay, no, wait, so I've had an idea.
Oh, okay, you want to fight KSI.
Pretty much KSI is the black one.
Oh, yeah, there you are. Right. Right, okay, so you look relatively well built. I can't tell you've got like loads of clothes on and stuff, so I can't tell if you're ripped or anything. I'm also...
You're not ripped.
Well, I'm kind of ripped. I'm like ripped in the same way as the other bloke is, as Randolph. I look a bit like Randolph, a little bit.
Right? Yeah, I'm ripped right now.
Right, so here's the thing, right?
Since the fight, I lost a lot of weight where JJ put it on. I gave him my weight.
Is that in there now as well? Was that Randolph then?
Yeah, it's both Kendall and Randolph.
God, this is hard work.
if you're saying that you want to fight with KSI...
No, what I'm saying is I don't want to fight.
Oh, okay,
I want to set something up as if we are going to have a fight.
Do it.
And then we won't have the fight. That's very important, though, that we don't have the fight. I reckon if I keep pushing their buttons in the right way, they'll start fighting each other right now. Mm. That'd be all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
got loads of Twitter followers and stuff. That'd be a proper big scandal. Won't be happy unless one of them's lost a tooth by the end of this interview. See, I don't know who any of these people are. I don't know. Oh no, it's Logan Paul, the dude who was all hounded off Twitter, YouTube because of
the body, and then he posted a video.
That's
about
that dude, right? Okay.
So we always wanted KSI.
I heard about that. What could I do as someone who doesn't gorge myself on this horrible YouTube spatting back and forth and that? I mean, I don't know why you can't all be friends. What would have to happen for you and what's he called, RuPaul, whatever he's called,
Logan Paul.
Would happen
RuPaul.
For you to make friends again and to be all good friends in the end, and then have a nice handshake, and maybe you can come on and sing a song on one of your pop songs? Then what would need to happen to do that?
I guess I'd need to knock him out.
Oh,
what's with all? Why are you so aggressive? Why you don't have to knock him out?
It's my destiny to knock him out.
Mm. Can't you just do it with words and witticisms and bit of Oscar Wilde business? You've got to punch him.
We've already done that. It's time to get in the ring and do what is necessary.
I think it's a shame that.
If anything, it's entertaining for everyone else.
Yeah, instead of your bank manager. But I think it's a shame that that is what it has come to. I don't know if you recall, you're probably just a little child when it happened, but the pop star Robbie Williams and Liam Gallagher were going to have a fight at one point. The Brits, Robbie Williams, said, I'll have a fight with you and all that, and Liam Gallagher said no. And I thought Liam Gallagher was the bigger man for that.
That's boring.
So what I think is, I think the best way of dealing with the situation is, forgive me, KSI, I think you should rise above it, is what I think you should do.
No chance, mate.
What would be the damage if you didn't actually have the fight?
What?
Is it the difference between a house and not a house?
No, it's because we've had the fight and it ended in a draw.
Right, call me cynical, right? Right, call me cynical about this. No fight ends in a draw ever. A fight only ends in a draw if it's stopped.
Also, if I knock him out, like, we don't have to hear his terrible music as well.
Right, okay. I think this is all about double bubble, isn't it? It's a draw. There we go, another fight. There we go again.
Well, you think there's going to be another draw?
Fuck. Why could you not fight him properly if you're so hard?
What?
Why was it a draw? Should have knocked him out, mate. Come on.
Well, I mean...
You wanted a draw because you know that you could get money for another fight. That's what it is.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
We have four diamonds in the house.
Fates Five of Diamonds. I did join their band a while back, so it's
Phoenix That's not
five.
What my notes say, so sorry. That's incorrect. How are you girls?
So we literally had like a 12-hour day yesterday on 2 hours sleep.
Oh my God.
Which was...
Heels on.
Yeah, we had been in heels for about 24 hours yesterday.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Do you know after the club when your feet like hurt so bad that you can't even take it no more? And then you have 2 hours sleep and you wake up and your feet are still throwing.
And you've got to put them back into heels.
Yes, literally. Yeah,
what is wrong with you girls? Just wear a pair of trainers.
It doesn't
have the same effect, darling.
No, especially when you're 2 foot. I mean, you're
short.
Like, how tall are you? Two?
Oh, they're
not bad.
Yeah, the tall ones.
We're going to need some heels on.
So you guys took part in X Factor 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
Nearly four now.
Yeah, 2016. What was that experience like for you?
Amazing. It's such a great opportunity. Obviously, we wouldn't be where we are now without it. I think it just taught us so much. We always say it's like a fast track into the industry.
Massively. Yeah.
But you still have to work for it. That's the thing.
Oh, Christ, yeah.
Early mornings, late nights.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
But it's, if anything, we'd say it's probably like harder to go through that like fast track and then come into the real industry and be like, oh, wait, like... You realise how grateful you are to have experienced those things, because some artists don't even get to experience what you experience when you're on that show. Yeah.
And who was your mentor?
Louis Walsh.
Did you guys go in together, or did you get paired up when you were there? Like, how did you meet? Like, can you tell me, explain to me, because I'm really interested in stuff like
that. We went in as four soloists, but no one ever saw that because like the producer's audition that we went to. And then we got like rejected. We didn't get to be a soloist. And they called us and they were like, oh, there's a management company that are putting together a band. Would you be interested? We can pass on your details. So we were like, yeah, why not? And we ended up in this day in June. Was it June the 20th?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 30 girls in a room. We'd never met before, like, we're from different parts of the UK, and literally throughout the day, like, girls were getting sent home, and we were the final four at 6 p.m.
Oh my god.
The funny thing is, none of us were actually going to go to the audition, like, at the start. Like, I couldn't get the train down. Sophie, where were you?
My best friends booked my ticket because I wasn't going to go.
And Caroline,
I was in New York.
Oh, I was going to go. To
she really wanted to be a good cover. And what's it been like for you since the show? Because you did pretty well.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we've had like a crazy few years, and I think when you actually look back, you're like, oh my God. But in the moment, you don't always realise how amazing things are. So last year, we supported Rita Ora on her UK leg of her tour, which is like amazing. And at the time, like, we found out, I think it was just over a week before the tour, and you don't really have time to process it.
Yeah.
And then you look back and you're like, what the hell? We were performing in the O2, like, it was nuts.
Did you guys, like, disagree on what songs you wanted to perform at that point?
No.
Because you've got a week to decide. We've only got singles, really.
We're still pretty new, so
we just have to go with it, but we've definitely performed our favourites.
Yeah.
And how were the crowd?
Oh my gosh, amazing.
We had such a good reaction.
Afterwards, we don't think we saw one negative comment.
Oh wow.
In the whole of that tour on any of the social medias, which actually is really, really not easy to achieve. There's always someone that's got something to say.
Yeah.
And we didn't have any of that.
Because if I was a singer, I'd be so scared to literally sit there and go, okay, what's the crowd going to be like? Imagine they're all just standing there like little sardines, like just standing like staring. What'd you do?
Some people do. When we got out on stage, obviously everyone's there for Rita Ora.
Yeah.
Like, so we get looked at like, who are these girls? And then by the end of it, like, they're doing the dance moves with us. So
no, there was times where you'd smile at someone like singing and they'd just stare right through you.
They wouldn't even smile back.
They probably weren't thinking you were looking at them.
Yeah, that's what it is. I don't think they think you're looking at them, but the amount of times you do that where you're on stage and you're like, and they're like, okay.
I'm not going to lie, I'm the culprit, because I'm sometimes like that at a concert, and I'm having the best time, but you can't see that on my face.
I got called out by a drag queen once in a gay bar because I was just staring. She was like, you're staring at me like I'm a piece of art. I was just going... I was having a good time, I was just watching what she was doing.
The day we released our first single, Name On It, we went to see Katy Perry at the O2. The label took us and it was amazing, and I remember one of them saying to us, girls, you look miserable.
Did you have fun?
You don't realise, like, that's what we dream of doing.
Yeah, so take it all in.
It's like watching, I don't know, like,
it's a pro. Like, it's actually, you're soaking it all in. You're not necessarily going to stand there every time, like, with your arms in the air.
You're actually
soaking it in, so I get it.
Well, we're going to play a little game with you today.
I am going to be
the quiz master.
I don't even know what the game is.
Well, so basically, we've got a load of X Factor related headlines.
Oh,
but
you have to guess
which word has been blanked out.
Okay.
I'm actually an X Factor, like, I was a fan, so hopefully I'm good.
Okay, let's try one. Simon Cowell wanted Cheryl Affair. She played me like a blank.
Violin.
Fiddle.
Piano. Cello. Dog. Fiddle.
You're actually not far off.
Cow.
Played me like a
cat.
Bull.
Cat.
Played me like a beautiful cat.
Who wrote that headline?
Simon actually admitted himself. Yeah, I don't.
It's not very sexual.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Like, is cat basically, are you trying to say P?
No, I don't think he is.
Oh,
she played me. He's saying she played him.
But how do cats play?
Anyway,
obviously, maybe it's China.
Who the hell knows? But yeah, apparently, they were quite into one another. Who knew?
Oh.
Louis Walsh claims he only left the X Factor because Simon Cowell blank
kicked him off. Oh, is it just one word?
Booted.
Three words.
Booted him off.
Him off is right.
Sacked him off. Is it?
Didn't like him.
Is it a swear word? Him off.
No.
Fucked him off.
No.
Oh, you went for it.
Booty
kick.
I was thinking of a different
swear.
Tossed.
Tossed.
You dirty girl.
No, it was paid. Paid
him off. Oh, that was obvious.
I don't mind being paid off.
It's not very juicy.
I'm not over that. Sorry, guys.
Okay, this is an interesting headline. Nicole Scherzinger is a blank from Cheryl.
Downgrade.
Yeah.
Did you say that?
Sick at
this. Did you sell that story, Joanna?
Wow. Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
You're listening to Christmas Hamper on FUBAR Radio.